All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves in Parshas Lech Lecha, and a lot of incredible pieces to focus on Lech Lecha. But what I'd like to actually focus on tonight is not as much something that happens in the story as much as something that does not occur in the story. What do I mean? Take a look at number one. Vayomer Hashem al Avram. Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Avram Avinu, and remember again, we focused in past years about the actual chronology of Parshas Lech Lecha. Does Lech Lecha actually unfold as it appears here in the Torah? Because remember again, the interesting just anomaly in the narrative is that we're actually introduced to Avram Avinu at the end of last week's parsha, and actually it appears at the end of last week's parsha that Avram Avinu has already left his homeland and has already set out for Haran. So it's a big dispute. I think we spoke about this about 4 or 5 years ago about the actual timeline of the Lech Lecha events. We're not going to get into that right now, but suffice it to say, the first time God speaks to Avram Avinu, Vayomer Hashem al Avram, Lech Lecha me'artzecha u'mimoladetcha u'mibeis avicha, El ha'aretz asher ar'eka. I want you to leave your land, your birthplace, your father's home, and I want you to go to some land. Again, remember, the amazing part is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not identify which land he wants Avram Avinu to go to, but I want you to go to the land that I will show you, that I will identify, or somehow you will figure out on your own at some future point. So the Ramban in number 2, Nachmanides, or Moshe ben Nachman, raises a very simple question. I was so gratified to see this because this has bothered me for years. I guess I never read far enough along in the Ramban. But the Ramban asks a simple question. V'hine zos ha-parsha lo be'era kol ha'inyan. So the Ramban says, you know, when you look at this, I've said many times in this shiur, and many times in our Navish and other shiurim, to fully appreciate any of the stories of Tanakh. So what do you have to do? Right. You have to pretend like you're looking at it for the first time. You see, we know these stories already. We're experts in these stories. We know all the details. And that's why we don't often look at them with a critical eye. But to fully appreciate what's unfolding over here, you have to take a step back and pretend I'm seeing this story for the first time. Says the Ramban, imagine I open up the Chumash. Vayomer Hashem al Avram, lech lecha. God tells Avram Avinu such a dramatic command. Leave behind everything you know and go. Where should you go? I'm not telling you. And by the way, interestingly enough, you know, the Ribono Shel Olam never actually tells Avram Avinu where to go. He never actually gives Avram Avinu a particular destination or address. He just simply says go. The Ramban says there is something fundamental missing from the story. Back to number 2. Kimatam sheyomer lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu azov artzecha ve'etiva imach tova shelohaysa kamah ba'olam. See, interesting enough, so obviously, what is God telling Avram Avinu? It's very clear from the beginning of the parasha that God is telling Avram Avinu, you have a great destiny ahead of you, right? You're going to accomplish something magnificent. You're going to accomplish something great. You're going to be a special and wonderful person, an Av Hamon Goyim, a father of a multitude of nations. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to give you so many blessings. Okay? However, there's one piece missing. Mibli sheyachtim shehaya Avram oved Elokim al tzadik tamim. Says the Ramban, we are told that Avram Avinu is given this incredible mission and mandate. We are told that he's given incredible promises of life success, material success. And yet what? The Torah never attests to his righteousness. The Torah never makes a declarative statement that tells us Avram Avinu was a good guy. Avram Avinu was a tzaddik. Avram Avinu was righteous. Avram Avinu was a complete, was a tamim. There's never any description about the righteousness of Avram Avinu. We just simply launch into the narrative where God, now what the Ramban says, the fact that God tells Avram Avinu to leave everything and to go embark upon this new life and promises so much blessing indicates to us that clearly Avram was righteous, but yet the text never actually mentions it. Now, what's really bothering the Ramban? What's really bothering the Ramban is, if you look at number 3, the Torah says again in the beginning of last week's parasha, Eile toldos Noach, Noach ish tzadik, tamim haya bedorosov, esa Elokim hishalech Noach. So what's really bothering the Ramban over here is that, remember, it's not like we have so much biblical precedent to rely on. We're only in Parshas Lech Lecha. But it would appear in last parasha, when the Torah wants to speak about an individual who's going to have to blaze a new trail, when the Torah wants to tell us about a person who's going to be the father of humanity, when the Torah tells us about a person who is very special in the eyes of God, there is some level of biblical introduction to the particular personality. So we are told, Noach is a tzaddik, Noach is righteous, Noach is complete. The Torah gives us an introduction to this seminal figure, and yet, when it comes to Avram Avinu, no introduction. comes down to Avinu, no background. Again, we get a little bit of his of biographical background in last week's parasha, but no almost spiritual quality background. Who is this person? Is he special? Is he unique? Obviously, again, as we said before, we understand from the way that God describes his future that he is special and unique. But why no declarative statement to begin the story that this is the story of Avraham Avinu, he was a tzaddik, he was tamim? It's a very good question, a really excellent question, which is such, again, I want to point out, I don't know if it would bother us as much if the parasha of Lech Lecha was not back-to-back with Noach, but being that these two figures do appear back-to-back biblically, and the Torah goes out of its way no less than three times to speak about the righteousness of Noach, and yet absolutely no statement about the righteousness of Avraham Avinu, leads the Ramban to ask, why does the Torah not give us some type of introduction to this important personality? So there are a number of answers to this question. I want to share with you two primary answers. Take a look at number four. So this is from the Sichos, from the Shurim discussions of Rav Tzvi Yehuda HaKohen Kuk. Rav Tzvi Yehuda was the son of Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk. Rav Kuk, of course, was originally the Rav of Yafo, then becomes the Rav of Yerushalayim, and later on becomes the Rav of what was then Palestine, pre-state Israel. He founded a yeshiva called Merkaz HaRav, and when Rav Kuk died, his son pretty much became the leader of the Rosh Yeshiva, a little bit afterwards, as Rav Shapiro was first. Then he becomes the Rosh Yeshiva, and ultimately, again, he was the one who really publicized his father's writings. He was the one who really went out of his way to bring his father's Torah to the general masses, because interestingly enough, Rav Kook had volumes and volumes of manuscripts, but for whatever the reason, he never published. He never put anything out during his lifetime. So son of Tzvi was responsible. So Rav Tzvi Yehuda, most of the Torah that's in the name of Tzvi Yehuda is really his father's Torah. So Tzvi Yehuda writes the following. Look at number four, and this is really amazing. He says, "Lo nisker b'Torah she'Avram Avinu haya tzadik." The Torah never makes mention that Avram Avinu was righteous. Lifnei she'ne'emar lo vayomar Hashem al Avram. So amazing, so writes Tzvi Yehuda. The Torah never tells us that Avram Avinu was righteous, and yet the Torah just simply says, as opposed to Le'umas Noach, Etzlo Nisker Shehayah Tzadik. Again, what we just said before, by Noach, the Torah tells us that he was righteous, but by Avram Avinu, no mention of his righteousness. Yesh, so look what Rav Tzvi Yehuda writes. Yesh lomot, lo meirak, lo rak meha tochen shela Torah, elagam meha signon shela. When it comes to learning Chumash, you shouldn't just learn the text, but you also have to appreciate and pay attention to the nuanced style. Mevayer ha-Maharal, he quotes the Maharal. We're going to quote the Maharal in a little bit more depth in just a moment. Shebekavona ha-Elima ha-Torah, v'gonza esit koso sha'Avraham Avinu. The Torah purposely did not divulge and almost intentionally obscured and hid the righteousness of Avram. Why? Ki inyono shel Avram Avinu, Eino maschil mitzit kaso hapratit. So I see this as something amazing. He says, because the Avraham Avinu story does not begin with Avraham's personal righteousness. The story of Avraham Avinu is not one that begins with a righteous individual selected by God. So where does Avraham Avinu's story start? Eitzel, chasidi umas ha'olam. He says, by the nations of the world, paragraph B in number four. Hagadlus shalahem, hi pratit ishit. By the nations of the world, righteousness is gauged how? Righteousness is gauged by the collective worth, impact, or value of the individual. So a righteous Gentile, Rav Tzvi Yehuda would say, is judged ultimately, how does a person earn, merit that title? So ultimately, that has to do with my individual righteousness. Mimata lemalo. A person generates holiness below, and that holiness then ultimately transcends above. Mikoach es amtsus viskachus ha'enoshis. So again, in the nations of the world, so righteousness is fundamentally dependent on the cultivation of an individual or personal personality. Inyono maschil min hashamayim. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Lokach it's Avraham Avinu. But Avraham Avinu was a different entity. What does that mean? Giduloso mofia mimalo lemato. Avraham Avinu's holiness does not begin with Avraham Avinu. Where does his holiness begin from? Where does it emanate from? It emanates from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Inyono maschil min hashamayim. Avraham Avinu's greatness begins in the heavens. Mikoach yitzira elokis shal nishmaso hamiyuchedes. With the creation of a uniquely singular Abrahamic soul. Bechira elokis. Avraham Avinu was chosen by God. Kimo shekasuv, ato hu Hashem Elokim, asher bacharta ba'Avram. You are the God who ultimately chose Avraham Avinu. V'zeh nimshach me'od, excuse me, me'az v'adhino. And this notion has been perpetuated from Avraham Avinu all the way until us. Mimenu v'adelinu. From him to us. Gam inyono maschu min ha'shamayim, ato bechartanu. So Ratziyahu says something very interesting, and he's quoting the Maharal. We're going to see the Maharal inside in just a moment. Ratziyahu says, had the Torah gone ahead and essentially given us an introduction that Avraham Avinu was a tzaddik, I would have assumed that the reason God chose Avram was why? Because he was a tzaddik. But right at Tzvi Yehuda, that's not why God chose Avraham. Why did God choose Avraham? Why? Because he wanted to. Because he chose Avraham. Because Avram was a unique individual even before he did anything. Avraham Avinu was chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu for this particular destiny. Look at the Maharal in number 5. So the Maharal writes, remember, Rav Tzvi Yehuda is quoting the Maharal. So it's not his own ideal. So let's try to see this. Perhaps it'll make a little bit more sense in the Maharal himself. 5a. Avalafi hadvarim asher amarnu. So lecha, lo yikshaklam. So the Maharal is actually bothered by the same question that the Ramban was bothered by, namely, why doesn't the Torah give us any level of introduction to the Abrahamic personality? Tell us he was righteous, tell us he was a tamim, just like you did by Noach. But the Maharal says it's not a problem. Why? Ki eitzel Noach, lo haya rak bechira prati, v'ha bechira ha-pratis, hu lefi mashehu, v'ha kol lefi ma'aset tzidko shelo. So says the Maharal, why was Noach chosen? Why was Noach chosen as the sole remnant of humanity? Why was Noach chosen ultimately again to be essentially the second Adam? Why? Why? Because he was the most righteous person of his generation. Whether or not that's an incredible accomplishment or not is immaterial to our conversation tonight. But the point is, he was actively chosen, meaning there was a search process. The Ribono Shel Olam is looking for someone righteous, the most righteous individual in the generation who was going to perpetuate humanity, who was going to allow the world to be rebuilt. So Noach was chosen again because he satisfied the criteria of divine righteousness. It was all about Noach's own personality. Avram, and that's why, again, the Maharal says, that's why the Noach story has to begin. Eile toldos Noach. What? So you're wondering to yourself, why is Noach going to be chosen? Because he is a tzaddik, because he is a tamim. The Torah tells us about why Noach is chosen from the beginning of the story. Avram, this is amazing. Avram, lo haya bechira pratis. Avram Avinu was not chosen because he was Avraham Avinu. Rak bu'uma ha'yisraelis shehem zaro. So here the Maharal highlights something. We could spend an entire night just on this idea that Avraham Avinu wasn't chosen because of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was chosen because his offspring would be Klal Yisrael. Or in other words, says the Maharal, Avraham Avinu was chosen not for himself, but he was chosen because of the offspring he would produce. He was chosen because he would be the father of Klal Yisrael. So by choosing Avraham Avinu, God is not actively choosing Avraham. God is choosing Klal Yisrael. Shem Zaro, Shariksiv Osa Bechira, Ve'esa Oschala Goy Gadol, V'ze Bechira Klalit. So says the Maharal, the proof is that when God is first introducing himself to Avraham Avinu, what does he say? Aside from everything I'm going to do for you, I'm going to make you into a great nation. And in fact, again, if you look at the way the parasha plays out, over and over and over, the promise that God stresses most to Avraham Avinu is that it's going to make him into a great nation, which shows that the choosing of Avram is not about Avram. The choosing of Avram is about Klal Yisrael. It's the choosing of the Jewish people. V'ze bechira klalis, o bechira kimoze, ein tole b'maase klal, v'lo bechei, paragraph B in number 5, ki amase hu leprat, af ki bevada is chus avos moil, mikom makom ikar ha bechira bechira klalis bo'u bizaro. So amazing enough, says the Maharal, God doesn't choose Avram Avinu because of something he did or he did not do. God chooses Avraham Avinu ultimately again because Avraham Avinu is to be the father of Klal Yisrael, and therefore he is ultimately choosing the descendants, but obviously he can't choose the descendants without first choosing the patriarch. Paragraph C. Shabechira ha-pratis hu lefi ha-mekabel. When an individual is chosen, so that is all about the merit and the qualities of the individual. And therefore, v'nishtana hamakabel, yishtana hadavar. It's interestingly enough, if somebody merits something because of their own personal worth, value, or accomplishments, so what happens if their personal value or worth changes? What happens? Right? The promises change as well. The promises change as well. Ulechin yuturas ha-sheila, shelo hiskir ha-kosuv tzitkas avrim kodim shenigla alav ha-shechina, v'omr lo lech lecha me'artcha mularetcha. So it says, now we understand why God makes no mention of Avram Avinu's righteousness before choosing him. I'll tell you why. V'im kein ha-yazo sa'ava ha-teluya, excuse me, I'm sorry. Paragraph D. Manasseh says something amazing. He said, had God told Avram Avinu, Avram, lech lecha me'artcha mularetcha. You know why? Because oschara isa tzaddik, because you're righteous, because you're tamim. So what would we infer from that? God is choosing Avram Avinu because he's righteous and he's complete. So what's the corollary of that statement? If he's no longer righteous and he's no longer complete, if he abdicates his spiritual lofty level, then what happens? Then all bets are off. Then God drops him and moves on to someone else. Says the Maharal, but that is not the nature of the relationship between God and Avraham and Avraham's descendants. Lefichach el bechira ha-pratis yeshinui, velo la bechira klalis. Therefore, when an individual is chosen, because he or she possesses some kind of trait, if the trait changes, or the application of those trait changes, or the intensity of the trait changes, the relationship of God towards the individual changes as well. But when God creates a relationship that is not based on anything, so to speak, that is just fully about an act of choosing an individual or a nation, even if circumstances change, then what? The relationship remains intact. He says, "V'kevan shelo nizkar tzidkas Avram, kodem sha'amar lo lech lecha me'artzecha." And since God did not mention Avram Avinu's righteousness before he tells him to go on the lech lecha commandment, lo hayazeh b'shvil tzidkas Avram. So the Maharal says something amazing. He says, everybody has it wrong. Everyone thinks that Avram Avinu was chosen because he was righteous. That's not why he was chosen. In fact, again, ad shetomar im batal davar batal ava. He quotes, he quoted this before, the Mishnah Avos. And the beautiful Mishnah Avos says, "Kol ava tluya b'davar." Whenever you have love that is dependent on something, if you love someone because of something, then what? If the something disappears, then the love does as well. But if you have a love that is dependent on nothing, which of course is a very interesting idea by itself, because all love is dependent on something, but we'll save that for a different time. But if you have a love that's dependent on nothing, then ultimately, no matter what happens, no matter what changes, the love remains intact. Says the Maharal, had the Torah attested to Avraham Avinu's righteousness, one would have thought that the love between God and Avram, more importantly, the love between God and Avram's descendants was dependent on something. It was teluya badavar. Only if we're righteous, only if we're complete, only if we're perfect, does HaKadosh Baruch Hu love us. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? God omits any mention of Avram Avinu's righteousness. As if to say what? God is choosing Avram. Why is God choosing Avram? Again, I'm the reader. I'm looking at this. Why is God choosing Avram? And the only answer that I could come up with is because. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, now again, obviously it's got to be something, but the truth is the something does not come up now. Because at the end of the day, what the Torah is trying to highlight us, says the Maharal, is that the relationship between God and Avram Avinu, and by extension, the relationship between God and the offspring of Avram, us, Klal Yisrael, is Ava She'ena Teluya Bedavar. It is a love that is dependent or hinged on nothing. It is a love that simply stands and exists by itself. Is the love intensified if I'm righteous? Absolutely. Is the love amplified if I'm tummy, if I'm complete a person? No question. But the love still exists even if I have none of those traits. V'im kein, tia b'chira zo shabacha Avram batal. V'lakach, lo his, you'll notice the style of the Maharal is the Maharal is very repetitive in his writing. So he said the same thing already a number of times. Let's just end off with it. U'lakach, Lo hizkir zechuso lomar. He said, therefore, again, there is no mention of Avram Avinu's righteousness to teach us that the choice of Avram Avinu as the patriarch of the Jewish people was not dependent on any particular merit or any righteousness. So this, you understand, just before we get back to our shir, the profundity of this maral. The profundity of this maral is that this is our first introduction to Klal Yisrael, so to speak. Obviously, there's no Jewish people. Avraham Avinu is not Jewish. There are no Jewish people until Har Sinai, until Sinaitic revelation, until Torah. But Avraham Avinu is the first, we'll call it, recognized monotheist. And he is certainly the father of our nation. The first lesson that God teaches us about himself is what? Such a profound lesson. That he loves us no matter what. That it's the first lesson we learn, the first exposure we get to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is an exposure of unconditional love. Yes, we want to strive to be righteous. Yes, we want to strive to be wonderful. Yes, we want to strive to go out and find favor in God's eyes by doing the right things. But even should we fail, even should we fall short, that divine love is no less intense. That divine love is no less meaningful. And therefore, how does the Torah do that? By showing God chooses Avraham Avinu without any prerequisites, apparently, not because he was righteous. Noach is chosen because he satisfies certain criteria, which you see, by the way, that ultimately if Noach abdicates that criteria, then ultimately he suffers a downward spiral, as he does later on in the story. But Avraham Avinu, at the end of the day, is chosen simply because he's chosen, again, simply because HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose him out of an entire world of humanity, chose him not just for himself, but for his offspring. So this is the way Rav Tzvi Yehuda and the Maharal understand the absence of any mention of Abrahamic righteousness. Again, one more time. So Noach is called righteous because the Torah is telling me why he was chosen. Avraham Avinu, no mention of righteousness, because if it would mention it, you would think that's why Avraham Avinu was chosen, but that's not why he was chosen. Why was he chosen? We don't know. That was a Ribono Shel Olam's decision, but at the end of the day, the absence of any mention of righteousness tells us that the love between God and his people is an Ava She'ina Teluya Badavar. Beautiful. Except, I have incredible difficulty with this Maral, and by extension of Tzvi Yehuda, only because, okay, I understand the message. I understand the message that the Torah wants to convey to us, that God's love between himself and us is not dependent on anything. But God chose Avraham Avinu out of a whole sea of humanity, which tells us what? There must have been a reason. So you want to tell me we don't want to mention Avraham Avinu's righteousness? Okay, that's fine. But there must have been some reason why Avraham Avinu was marked, was chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There has to be some reason ultimately, again, why it was Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu, remember, I want to point out, Avraham Avinu is not the only monotheist. There are other monotheists at this time as well. There are other righteous individuals at this time as well. Again, maybe it's not a lot of people, but he's not the only person in the running for this particular destiny. So now that we accept the premise of the Maharal and Rav Tzvi Yehuda, let's try to go a little bit deeper and try to figure out, well, why was it? What was it about Avraham Avinu? What was it about the Abrahamic personality that caused God to tap him on the shoulder and really set him aside for this beautiful, magnificent, and eternal mission? So to appreciate this, let's start with the Rambam. So this is a very famous Rambam in the laws of Avodah Zarah, out of all places, interestingly enough. So the laws of idolatry. So the way the Rambam starts off in the laws of idolatry is he gives a little bit of a history lesson as to the evolution of idolatry. Because remember, again, idolatry was an innovation by man. That's not the world was originally. Adam and Rishon, bless you, Chava, were monotheists. So idolatry comes onto the scene later on in mankind's history. So the Rambam talks about it. And in the middle of describing the evolution of idolatry, the Rambam tells the story of Avraham Avinu. Remember again, the Torah is not a storybook. The Torah is not a storybook. And in fact, again, remember, the only stories recorded in the Torah are for what purpose? Are only stories that teach us moral, ethical lessons. Stories that just give us historical information are usually not included in the Torah. That's why we have Medrash. Medrash often serves to go ahead and fill in a lot of the narrative blanks. So look what the Rambam writes. Quoting the Medrash over here. 6 Aleph. Kevan shenigmal isanze. Once this young boy was weaned. Now isan means a young child. Now again, just keep in mind, so biblically speaking, we assume that a child was weaned at what age? At 3. at 3 years old. Okay, just keep that in mind for just a little bit. So once he was weaned, which of course, by the way, being weaned also represents much more than just a child stopping to nurse. What else does it represent? Independence. Right? It represents the idea that he is no longer attached, literally and figuratively attached to his mother for sustenance, for nourishment. So as soon as he began to feel a little bit independent, what does Avraham Avinu do? Hischil shotet bedato. Now this is a very interesting phrase which we'll come back and analyze in just a little bit. He began, l'shotet bedato means, l'shotet means to wander. To wander. He began to wander intellectually. V'hu katan, he was very young. V'hischil lachsho b'yom b'layla. And he began to think day and night. V'haya t'miya. And he always wondered the same basic question. Heich efshar shiyihya hagagal hazeh, noek tamid v'lo yev lo manik umi yisave voso. So little Avram had a very simple question. How could it be that there's this whole world, there's this whole universe, and everything's happening, and yet there's no one who blesses you, there's no one who controls it? It's impossible for the world to simply propel itself. So remember, Avram Avinu didn't have a Rebbe, no one to instruct him. Rather, he was immersed in idolatrous, paganistic culture. So what happened? So Avraham Avinu, his parents were idol worshippers, his friends were idol worshippers, his nation, and who else worshipped idols? Avraham Avinu himself. You know, the Gemara says we have in the Babylonian, in both versions of the Talmud, we have what's called Maseches Avodah Zarah, a tractate Avodah Zarah, which talks about some idolatries. So the Gemara says that Avraham Avinu also had a Maseches Avodah Zarah, and it was hundreds and hundreds of volumes because it detailed all of the idolatrous practices which Avraham Avinu himself was proficient in. Why was he proficient in it? Because he also worshipped. He was part of greater society. See, he was part of their polytheistic idolatrous worship as well. What happened? V'libo meshotet. See that same word again. But his heart was always wandering. Umeven, and always trying to understand. Ache hisig derech ha'emes. V'heven kava tzedek misvunoso hanechono. Until Avraham Avinu realizes the truth. What is the truth? The truth is the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, existence of God. How does he come to this truth according to the Rambam? Amazingly enough, it appears that he comes to it fully on his own. The Yada, she Shem Eloka Echadu, v'hu manig ha-galga v'hu bar ha-kol, v'in b'chala nimtze Eloka chutz mimenu. So he realized that there is one God. This one God controls everything. There is no God outside of this one God. The Yada, she kala olam to'im. And Avraham Avinu then quickly understood that everyone else is mistaken. Because what everyone else was doing is, instead of worshipping God, they are worshipping God's creations. Now remember again, they weren't so far off. Because what they saw is they saw the divinity and they saw the holiness and the creations of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which we are charged to do as well. But instead of realizing that these were just a manifestation of divine will and might, they looked at these creations as divine themselves. Paragraph base. Uben arba'im shana, and it was at the age of 40, hikir Avraham esboro. It was at the age of 40 that Avraham, hikir means what? Recognized. Now, recognize almost means, like from an intellectual perspective, he really began to, so to speak, understand and recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kevan shehekir v'yada, hischil ha-hashiv tshuva al-sal b'nei orkasdim, v'la'aroch dini mohem, v'lomar she'ein zu derech ha-emes shatem holchim ba, v'shibar ha-tslamim, v'hischil ha-dil ha-am she'ein ro'i la'avod ela le'leka ha-olam, v'lo ro'i l'shtachvus l'hakril v'nasek edish ha-kiru kol ha-bruim ha-boim. And what happened? After Avinu recognizes this incredible truth, so then what happens? He realizes when you've discovered the truth, you need to share that with others. So what happens? He begins to share his newfound theological truths with all of those around him. And he begins to ask them questions about what it is that they do. He begins to get them to question their own practices, their own ideas, their own ideals. And what happens? He begins to tell them that essentially they found the wrong path of worship. Paragraph Gimel. Kevan shegavra leim b'ra'i Yosef. So again, now the Rambam then tells us that what happened, that again, ultimately, he began to antagonize people. People did not like the fact that Avraham Avinu was trying to punch a hole in their belief system. And ultimately, again, they tried to kill him. And the Rambam goes on to tell the rest of the story. Skip down a little bit, about five lines down. So the Rambam writes, So what happens? Avraham Avinu then decides that what is he going to do? He's going to take it on the road. And what happens? He goes in, he starts to go city to city, place to place, to preach the word of God. To preach the word of God. And everywhere he goes, he exposes people to his newfound reality. Ad shehegia le'eretz Canaan. Ultimately, again, this journey ultimately took him to the land of Canaan. V'kori shenemar v'ikr shem b'shem ha'kelelom. V'cheivan shahaya ha'am, shayu ha'am miskabtzin elav. V'sholon lo'al dvarav. Hayim odia l'chol echad v'echad kefi da'ato. This is absolutely amazing. So what was Avraham Avinu's approach? Avraham Avinu had a very personal, individualized approach. Perhaps he would speak to the masses, but then he would also give custom-tailored theological instruction. He would speak to each person in accordance with where they were holding in life, explaining to them based on the questions they had. And so what happened? Avraham Avinu literally had tens of thousands of followers. And these are the individuals, these are the household of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu composed books of theology. He gave those books to Yitzchak, Yitzchak to Yaakov, Yaakov to the Shvatim, and the Shvatim ultimately to their own descendants. So this is the position of the Rambam. Comes along the Ravid in number 7. Now the Ravid is Rav Avraham ben David, who lives in the early 1300s. Avraham ben David wrote a commentary on the Rambam, a critique on the Rambam. Remember, the Rambam is already dead by the time that the Ravid is writing. And the Ravid is known for his scathing attacks on the Rambam. You know, you could disagree, and you could disagree. See, he disagrees with a capital Dalit. You know, he goes after the Rambam, sometimes with an incredible, incredible venom. See, here he's much calmer. So he writes over here that the Rambam writes that how old was Avraham Avinu when he found God? How old was he? This was in, remember, 6 bays. Ben Arbaim Shana, Hekir Esboro. Hekir Avraham Esboro. Avraham Avinu was 40 years old when he recognized God. The Ravid writes, Omar Avraham, Yesh Agada Ben Shalosh Shanim. But there's another medrash, and the other medrash says what? That Avraham Avinu recognized God when? When he was 3 years old. Now, what's happening over here? If you take a look at number eight, so the medrash records two opinions. Reish Lakish and Reish Lakish says, Ben Gimel Shanim Hikir Avram Esboro. Reish Lakish says that Avraham Avinu was 3 years old when he recognized his creator. And Rabbi Hanin, Rabbi Yochanan, Tarvayon, Amrin, Ben Arboim Shana, Hikir Avram Esparo. And the other opinion, Rabbi Hanin, Rabbi Yochanan, both say that no, he was 40 years old. Interestingly enough, what does the Rambam do? The Rambam really says both. Because remember, again, going back to the beginning of number 6, what did the Rambam say? Remember, 6 Aleph, just look back at this in one moment. Kevan Shenigmal Isanzeh, Hischil Shotet, as soon as the child was weaned. When was the child normally weaned? At the age of 3. So, interesting, according to the Rambam, what happens, I see, from the Maimonidean perspective, from the Rambam's perspective, it is impossible to fathom that Avraham Avinu actually recognized God at the age of 3. The Rambam can't accept that idea. Because, remember, even if you want to say that biblical 3 is different than our 3 today, the Rambam says 3 is 3 is 3. So what, maybe their 3-year-old was the equivalent to our 8-year-old? But even so, that is an intellectually underdeveloped mind. Says the Rambam, therefore it's impossible to think that Avraham Avinu recognized God at the age of 3. Instead, what the Rambam chooses to do is like this. He accepts both opinions of the marriage, but he creates a different construct. The journey and the quest to understand God began at the age of 3. And when did it reach its pinnacle? When did it reach its zenith? When did Avraham Avinu finally begin to understand? That was when? At the age of 40. A 37-year journey that begins with almost a childish, almost inquisitiveness, a childish wondering and questioning of the world around him that ultimately leads for 37 years, a man of 40, to finally being able to understand, whatever that means, be able to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So let me show you something amazing. Rav Soloveitchik has a series of essays, which actually were a series of shiurim, all about Avraham Avinu. The rabbi writes about Avram, what he calls the Abrahamic personality. So I want to share with you one piece. This is from the name of the collected essays. It's called Abraham's Journey. So I'm quoting to you. This is an essay that spans for about 15 pages. I just pulled out a couple of paragraphs that we're going to read together tonight. So look at this. Number 9, paragraph 8. It's a little bit long, but as I always say, you know, with the Rav's teachings, so I could paraphrase it for you, but part of the power of Rav Soloveitchik's Torah is in the formulation, the gibush, the formulation of the ideas. The way ultimately the words he uses, the formulations he uses, so I don't want to cheat you out of that, so let's look at it here. Number 9a, Abraham had no teacher, who then disclosed to him the greatest of all truths, namely the existence of the Almighty. So this, remember, and the Rambam already recognizes this. The Rambam says he has no Rebbe, he has no Modiyah, no one to give him instruction. So who helped him with this? In fact, and the Rav here says something amazing, in fact, God communicated with Avram constantly, although Avram was unaware that the intuitive insights and sudden flashes of his mind were words the Almighty addresses to prophets. They constituted a message from the Almighty to him. Paragraph B. We have already established that there are two kinds of prophecy. There is external prophecy, when the prophet beholds a vision or hears a voice coming from the outside. The identity of the speaker is disclosed to the prophet. There is, however, another kind of revelation. It is anonymous. The prophet is unaware of speech coming from beyond. He is not conscious that he is being addressed. The revelation transpires in silence. This kind of revelation occurred within the great personality of Avraham. God spoke from within. That is why Maimonides emphasizes the fact that Avram was not instructed by anyone. He was an Eson, Eitan, mighty within himself. The story of Avram is the story of a gifted and talented child who found the truth all by himself. Now this to me also is so amazing. Because what the Rav is saying is that even though Avram Avinu thinks that curiosity is sparked from within, that it is him who is doing all of the searching, there is a divine nudge. There is a divine push. There is a divine force that pushes Avram Avinu to explore. And the Rav says something amazing. The Rav says, and he says this elsewhere as well, that we all experience this type of prophecy. The Ribbono Shel Olam communicates to us all of the time. The Ribbono Shel Olam dispatches messages and ideas and pushes and pulls within us. What's the problem? What's the problem we have? Right? So very often we're just too busy to actually listen or to hear that divine voice. We're so busy doing anything and everything else that we don't have time to listen to the prophecy that emanates from within. But point number one that the Rav makes is lest you think that this was all Avraham driven, that this was all Avraham Avinu wanting to find God. Yes, Avraham Avinu had to make the choice to act. But that desire, that voice in his mind that kept saying, there must be more, there must be more, there must be more, that was nothing other than the Ribbono Shel Olam himself communicating with Avram. See, the search began at an early age. He did not fix the age precisely. Again, the Rambam doesn't say, the Rambam just says that Avram Avinu was weaned, and then he begins to search. So he doesn't tell us an exact age. However, the discovery or recognition of God occurred later. Maimonides wanted Avram to spend some 40 years searching, exploring, and questing for God. The Mishnah says, Ben Arboim Labina, at 40, one attains understanding. When man is born, he immediately comes in contact with reality. Questing for God is a spontaneous process. Not even an infant can forgo this mysterious drive. Yet it takes him 40 years before he begins to understand the universe. Bina has the connotation of grasping and understanding. Avram, who began to search for God around the age of 3, had to devote some 40 years to the bold and heroic enterprise of joining the infinite. So first of all, the Rav makes another important observation, which is that the notion of questing for God, you know, I'll tell you how this is. One of the amazing things that you always see with children is what?
They're curious.
They're curious. Remember again, so when they're very little, before perhaps they could intellectually articulate that curiosity takes the form how? That they'll open every drawer, right? Dump out every single thing. Get into whatever they can. Rav Soloveitchik suggests, you know, the Arizal actually writes about this as well. The Arizal says that there are many things that we do physically that really are a physical interpretation of spiritual messages. The soul dispatches a message to the body, and the body has a choice. The body could either interpret that message in a spiritual fashion, or the body could go ahead and interpret that message in a spiritual fashion. So for example, you know, I'll give you just a simple example of this. A simple example of this is, you know, there's an amazing thing that people get homesick. Right? People get homesick. So, of course, children get homesick, but it's interesting is that even adults, right, even if you're away on vacation, so there comes a certain point in time when what? Where you're ready to go home. You're just ready to go home. I bet it's vacation, right? It's wonderful. It's great. But there's a certain time where I just want to go home. Where does that come from? So remember, the neshama lives with a constant desire to go home. The neshama lives with a constant desire to go back to Shemayim. That's why I've quoted before, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Berdichev says on the Pasuk, call a neshama tahalel ka. Every neshama will praise God. So the Zohar writes, bechol neshima u'neshima tahalel ka. With every breath you should praise God. And the Rebbe writes, why with every breath you have to praise God? Because every single time I exhale, my soul wants to jump out of my body and return to Shemayim. My soul doesn't want to be here. My soul wants to be back with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What happens? Every single time I exhale, the Ribono Shel Olam commands my soul to remain in my body. That's why every single time I exhale, I have to say thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The soul has a natural desire to be home. So the soul dispatches that message to the body. It says, body, I want to go home. So how does body interpret that message? Remember, the great danger of the body is that the body takes every spiritual message and, I don't know if this is a word, but, physicalizes it. I don't know if that's a word, but you understand what I mean, right? Turns it into something physical. So the soul has the desire to get back to its physical, to its spiritual home. The body translates that as a desire to get back to the physical. So Rav Soloveitchik writes that, do you want to know why children are curious? Why children are just innately curious? Innately curious. That is because that doesn't come from a physical curiosity. That actually comes from a spiritual, from the time that we are born into this world, from the time that we can begin to physically interact with the world around us, we have a desire to learn more about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have a desire to learn more about our God, about our Father, about our Creator. But a child is too young to ultimately interpret that message in a spiritual fashion. So how does the child interpret it? The child interprets it in a physical fashion that expresses itself in a curiosity of the physical world around him. So therefore says the Rav, that Avraham Avinu has this curiosity as a child is not uniquely Abrahamitic. That's not uniquely. Every child is born with that curiosity. Paragraph D, l'shotet, we said this before, l'shotet denotes roaming, moving without having a particular place or destination in mind. We see this verse in Eov, paragraph E, the child at 3, 4, or 5 is restless. He is always on the move, exploring and searching for something. Because the child at this age does not distinguish between reality and fantasy, he is not satisfied with his environment, which is dull and unattractive. He looks for a colorful world and expects to find it either in the woods or in the attic. His imagination is in pursuit of something better and fairer, something he himself cannot name. And here the Rav writes something amazing. Paragraph F, just turn the page to the side. The famous French writer, Romain Rolland, of course, right? Romain Rolland, the famous French writer. I guess if you're Soloveitchik, he's a famous French writer. For the rest of us, he's just some French writer. So, famous French writer, this is amazing, listen to this, describes how restless Beethoven was in his youth. From early childhood, listen to how amazing this is, Beethoven used to hear melodies. He would say that there was an orchestra hidden somewhere, under the table, behind the curtain, in the attic or in the oven. He always heard beautiful melodies playing. And he thought it was somewhere outside of himself. The orchestra was indeed an orchestra, but it was hidden in him, not outside of him. Of course, the more sensitive the child is, and the richer his imagination, the bolder he is in his determination to find a different reality. In a word, a child's restlessness represents the spontaneous drive to God that every human being experiences, and which in adults also expresses itself in restlessness. Now, this is very important. The difference between child and adult. So remember again, the child has this restlessness. I want to know more, understand more, see more, comprehend more. So what happens as we get, the adults also have the restlessness. But what happens? The difference between the child and adult consists in the fact that the grown-up experiences the same sense of frustration as Koheles. His restlessness accompanied by a feeling of futility, while the child does not feel at all frustrated. If he is disappointed, he will simply try again. So what's amazing is the adult has the same restlessness, But the adult restlessness ultimately translates, says the Rav, into a feeling of futility. I can't uncover the secrets. I can't comprehend. I can't understand. I can't find the greater world out there. And so often the adult just simply gives up because the adult is exasperated about not being able to find a positive outlet for that restlessness. What does the child do if the child can't understand or discover something? Simply try over and over again. Paragraph H. We're only going to do one part of this paragraph. So the Rav writes, there are four basic differences between Avram's searching and the searching in which other children engage. Skip to paragraph I. First, Avram was persistent. The hostile environment did not nip the bud in his inner activities. He was consistent, almost compulsive. From age 3 to 40, he restlessly sought the truth 37 years. Why didn't he just drop the whole business? Now understand something. What the Rav is saying is like this. You have to appreciate something. So he's 3 years old. He feels that childish restlessness. He realizes there has to be more. And everyone around him is telling him what? Everyone around him is saying to him what? Stop it. Stop it. You know, everything we have is right here. The idols are here. Theology is here. Stop it. You're looking for more. There is no more. So it's not just that his restlessness perpetuates, but he has to swim against the current. Everyone else is trying to derail him from his mission, and yet he is persistent. 37-year theological journey. Against the tide of family, against the tide of friends, against the tide of community. Turn the page. He says in paragraph J, we're almost finished. Avram had no transcendental or apocalyptic help in the form of a revelation. What that means in English is that Avram Avinu has to engage in this journey all by himself. There's no prophecy. God never shows up. God never taps him on the shoulder and says, hey, Avram Avinu, I'm God. Or Avram, hey, Avram, I'm God. Just want to let you know you're not barking up the wrong tree. You're doing a great job. Keep at it. God never appears to him. God wanted, not in the beginning. God wanted Avram to discover him in a natural, normal way. Avram was extremely talented. He had a profound mind with an incisive outlook on the world. He was the great critic, the great destroyer, as well as the great builder. He searched for God in silence without being greeted by the one for whom he was searching and questing. The Almighty told Avram, if you won't discover me, there will be no covenantal community. You must discover me first by simply mobilizing your own intellect, by watching the world, by observing the cosmos, by introspective reflection and meditation. If you discover me, then I will reveal myself. Paragraph K. Listen to how beautiful this image is. We can visualize the excitement and the tremor that Avram experienced when he finally came to the conclusion that there is, behind the millions of stars and flying nebula, behind the fringes of the orderly and dynamic universe, an omniscient, omnipotent, eternal, and infinite being who created all and sustains his creation. So remember again what Rav is describing is, imagine, it's the end of the 37-year journey. Avram Avinu was 40 years old. And finally, Hikir, he understands and he recognizes that there really is a Ribono Shel Olam 37 years later. What began as a hunch, what began as a restlessness, has now turned into a true theology and a true understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Could we imagine his excitement? Avram, in a feat of ecstatic joy, in a state of rapture, completely intoxicated with love and longing, would have fallen on his face and fervently prayed, "Dear God, please show me a sign that you are there, beyond everything, outside of time and space. Please reveal your majesty and splendor. Please say one word to me. Let me hear your voice. Let me see your countenance. Let me feel your breath on my pale, fatigued face. Answer me. Tell all the pagan idol worshippers that you are the creator, Lord and master of the world. Come forward. You can make my task so easy and so simple." So at the end of the 37-year journey, when Avraham Avinu understands that there is a Kadosh Baruch Hu, what is he looking for more than anything? What is he looking for? An affirmation. Just emotion. Just one word. Just one word. Hi. Hi. Hey. What's up? Whatever it is, just some sign of life. Just I know it to be true. I know it even without the sign. But how wonderful it would be if I could have a divine confirmation. Paragraph M. However, the Almighty did not respond to Avram. Avram encountered an awesome silence, the silence of eternity. The mystery deepened and became more intriguing and frightening. Cynical pagan opponents asked, "Why doesn't the Almighty answer you?" Why can't he prove his existence to us? However, Avraham was not discouraged. He taught others. He carried a new code of morality selflessly, trying to convert people to the new faith. He exposed himself to the worst of all tortures, ridicule. He believed in an invisible, unapproachable, silent being. He sacrificed him and served him. He built altars and prayed to him. The pagans could not grasp it. They ridiculed Avraham's irrational loyalty to God. Their lack of understanding turned into hostility, and they began to persecute Avraham. However, Avraham's faith was not affected by God's silence and transcendence. He served God, teaching and proclaiming a new morality. Very, very profound piece. Baruch Soloveitchik. But why is this important for us? Because if you had to go ahead and summarize, and again, this is a much longer essay, I only gave you really just a couple of pieces of it. If you remember a question that we asked, which was, even if we accept the premise of Rav Kook in the Maharal, that the Torah is not stating Avraham Avinu's righteousness, lest you think that the love between God and the Jewish people is dependent on something, when in fact it is dependent on nothing, we must still ask ourselves why Avraham Avinu was chosen. And I think what the Rav is teaching us is an incredible idea. Do you know what the Kadosh Baruch Hu was looking for more than anything? The Ribono Shel Olam was not looking for a tzaddik. Who was he looking for? One word. He was looking for a motivation. I was going to say the word. Mevakish. He was looking for a seeker. He was looking for someone who would not rest until he discovered the truths about life. You know the amazing part about being a Mevakish? You know, again, so you would think to yourself, okay, Avraham Avinu found God at 40. Then what did he do at the age of 40? He found God, then what? I don't know, Disneyland, you know, whatever, you know, the biblical version. Okay, I found God, wonderful, we accomplished, let's take a little vacation. When you are a mevakesh, there's no such thing as a mevakeshin. When you're a mevakesh, remember, the word mevakesh means a seeker, someone who's constantly seeking something bigger, better, some higher truth, some new reality. The Ribono Shel Olam is not looking for a tzaddik. The Ribono Shel Olam is looking for someone even greater than the tzaddik. And the person greater than the tzaddik, ultimately, again, is the mevakesh, is the person who is always seeking, the person who is always growing, the person who is always trying to understand more, grasp more, do more, and ultimately, be more. So amazing enough, if we go back, so yes, in Parashas Noach, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduces us, when the Torah introduces us, ultimately to Noach. So what is Noach? Noach is a tzaddik. Very beautiful. But what is Avraham Avinu? Avraham Avinu is a mevakesh. So the Torah would, to go ahead and introduce Avraham Avinu as a tamim, or as a tzaddik, would actually demean the Abrahamic personality. Because to be a tzaddik or to be a tamim, what is that? How do you earn that title? How do you become a tzaddik? So generally, we call someone, meaning if I call someone a tzaddik, I'm saying Reuven is a tzaddik. So why am I calling him a tzaddik? What is that categorization based on? His past activities. Whatever he's done, obviously whatever he's done in his life until now, he's been wonderful, has been great, he's built himself into a wonderful personality, and therefore he's called the tzaddik. So the terminology tzaddik represents a snapshot of the individual based on the historical continuum of their life. To call Avraham Avinu a tzaddik would miss the entire power, the entire magnitude of the Abrahamic personality, because the Abrahamic personality is not about what has happened, but the Abrahamic personality is all about what? What is going to happen. Because the Mevakesh is always searching. The Mevakesh is always growing. The Mevakesh is always self-actualizing. And the Mevakesh, by the way, can never be defined. Because since the Mevakesh is always in a state of perpetual growth, what they are this minute, they're not the next minute. So how do you introduce an Avraham Avinu to the readership of the Torah? How do you introduce our patriarch ultimately again to us, his descendants, just by calling him Avraham? Enough said. He's called Avraham because you can't call him a tzaddik, you can't call him a tamim, and you can't even call him a vakish. I can't define him. You know why I can't define him? Because he's always evolving, because he's always changing, because he's always growing. And this is so amazing, because what it also tells us is what the Ribono Shel Olam really wants of us. You know, the Ribono Shel Olam never asks us to be tzaddikim. If you notice, there's not one of the 613 mitzvos is to be a tzaddik. There's no mitzvah to be a tzaddik. But if you look at the theme of many of the mitzvos, it's all about what? It's all about being a mevakesh. All what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants most of us is the same thing that he saw in our first patriarch. He wants us to be the kind of individuals that are focused on perpetual growth. The kind of individuals like Avraham Avinu. What was great about Avraham Avinu? That he took his childish zealousness, and instead of allowing it to be defeated in his adult life, he took it with him throughout every stage of life. He maintained that childish zeal for 37 years. You know, most of us have difficulty concentrating on something for 10 minutes. And yet Avraham Avinu went ahead and stayed true to the same mission for close to 4 decades. And during that entire time, he maintained that same excitement. He maintained that same zeal. He maintained that same level of an inquisitive nature. He was that child throughout. No matter how many times he failed, no matter how many setbacks he suffered, he kept on seeking, he kept on growing, he kept on being mavakish. I'll show you something interesting. And with this, we'll end. If you take a look at number 10, actually skipping ahead a little bit to Chayei Sarah. Because remember, again, Sarah Yimenu was a very important partner in the Abrahamic enterprise. So the Torah says, Vayuchayei Sarah me'ashana ve'esim shana v'sheva shanim. So the Torah says, Sarah Yimenu was 100 years, 20 years in Sarah. This is at her death. And Rashi points out, Kulon Shavin Latova. Last line, number 11. I'm skipping a little bit. All of them were good. They were all good years. And Rav Soloveitchik, again, points out something very interesting. The Rav writes that the Torah is describing 3 different periods in life. If you take a look in the second paragraph, in number 12, he writes, go back to the first paragraph. Rashi is suggesting that the 3 divisions of life, childhood, youth, and adulthood, need not be mutually exclusive. One can retain the positive strengths of past stages even as we progress in life. The charismatic covenantal personality, indeed, this is the mark of true greatness, is able to absorb, to experience the qualities of 3 periods simultaneously. The child is endowed with the capacity of an all-absorbing faith and trustfulness. Youth bursts with zealousness, idealism, and optimism. The adult, mellowed with years, has the benefit of accumulated knowledge and dispassionate judgment. Each age is physically and psychologically attuned to particular emphasis, but the superior individual can retain and harmonize the positive strengths of all 3 periods during his entire lifetime. Sarah was such a person. The goodness of her life was equally distributed. Kulin Shavon Latova. She was at the same time a child in her total faith, youthful in her exuberant idealism, and an adult in the maturity of her judgment. This was the tribute of Mitzvah Ban Sarah. So what's amazing? What was the hallmark of Sarah Imenu? Just like her husband, they both were able to keep that childlike curiosity, that childlike zeal, that childlike desire to do more, be more, understand more with them throughout their entire life. So 2 beautiful lessons emerge from just the, and this is only the first, we're so lucky to have such a beautiful Torah. This is only the first pasuk in this week's parsha, first pasuk, and it oozes with such incredible meaning and life symbolism. Lesson number 1 we learn just from the simple pasuk of Lech Lecha is lesson of the Maharal of Tzviuda Kohen Kuk. We learn about the love between God and Avram, which ultimately teaches us about the love between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ribbono Shel Olam loves us in a way of an Ava She'ena Teluya B'Davar. God does not make his love dependent on anything. Human love is often dependent on many things. Divine love is dependent on nothing. We are his children. He is our father. If we're more righteous, it just makes him happier. But even if we're not righteous, chas v'shalom, at the end of the day, that love does not dissipate, that love does not evaporate, that love remains intact. And we see that again through the nature of his relationship to Avraham Avinu. And lesson number 2, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks for most from us in life is not to be a tzaddik. Yes, it's good to be a tzaddik. That's wonderful. But being a tzaddik is not the pinnacle of life accomplishment. The pinnacle of true life accomplishment is to be an Abrahamic mevakish, to be able to continue seeking, continue growing, to be able to keep that childish zeal, to continue on the right path, and even if I suffer setbacks or failures, if I stumble or I fall, bless you, to have the childish resolve to get back up and try again. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves most is our ability to be a true mevakish, always growing, always doing, always continuing to self-actualize. Being a tzaddik is a wonderful thing. Being a noach is a wonderful thing. But the path to true life accomplishment is fundamentally dependent on our ability to evolve into mavakshin. All right, we'll stop over here for tonight. There's Mariv in the Beis Medrash now for whoever needs.